Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. I'm excited to welcome to the program Chris Mahlke. Chris, I appreciate you stopping by. You're making me laugh. The world without you, we're going to be talking about. But getting time to talk to somebody like you, I know you like to do interviews. I know you love to perform. So when did you start that process? When did you know you wanted to be a performer?
When I was, when I was in like high school, I was in, I used to jam with bands, you know, I used to play music. I still play music. I'm a singer, songwriter, composer. And so it was in high school. I started getting the, I played in blues clubs with my friends. And then when I went to college, I took a kind of elective course. I could have taken basket weaving or ballroom dancing or something like that. And he said, the guy says, why don't you just take an acting course? And I said, no, those guys are crazy. It's, no, he says, no, you like Marlon Brando and Lee Marvin. And, you know, I said, yeah, John Wayne, those old actors and stuff like that. He says, that's acting. I said, okay, but I don't want to be like, you know, some Elvis, you know, spin out clam, you know, movies or anything like that. Don't worry about it. Just take an acting class. So I was good at it. And I met some really great people, got involved with stuff. And so, you know, I was about 20.
You know, that so happened. Looking at your career, how many years has it been? You've been an actor.
I've been an actor since before Kurt Cobain died. So I'm drinking a shake here. I've been in Hollywood 44 years.
44 years. Mm-hmm. So you have fans of movies and TV shows that span 44 years. So when you start talking to people, I know who you are. Where did I see you? What kind of answers do you get from people when they are, they try to guess? You know, Chris, different
roles. Yeah. A lot of times they just know me from sometimes they just hear my voice and they'll turn around and they'll go, oh, you're that guy. And, or they'll go, they'll nail me from Boardwalk Empire. Yes, it's amazing. I'll tell you a story. I was doing summer, I was doing a TV series in Serbia called Mud on Your Tires. It's going to be in Serbian TV and Euro TV. It's a great, romantic comedy. And we were working really long hours, and I was up early in the morning. I went to grab a coffee in Belgrade, in this amazing sort of Balkan kind of city. And I turned to my girlfriend, Dana, and I said, Dana, you know, this is just really, I'm just feeling so tired and down. What am I doing with my life? And she said, you're doing a series, but you're just working hard. And I said, I just feel terrible. And I just felt a tap on my shoulder, and this little old man with two big bags coming, lugging these bags, you know, Eastern European style down the street. And he tapped me on his shoulder and said, I just want to tell you, I know who you are. I love your work. For all these years, you are a wonderful actor. God bless you. Keep on doing what you're doing. And he disappeared. I broke into tears.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be worth it in so many ways. What would you say was your favorite project you've ever done in your career?
Well, you know, I've done a bunch of really, really cool, smart projects all through. I always tell my agents, let's do the smart stuff. Let's do smart stuff, you know, and I've been able to do that. Twin Peaks is a big deal. And then I have to thank director Ted Kotcheff for putting me in Rambo, First Blood, when I was just a young actor.
You know? That was one of my I went with my father, God rest his soul, he's passed away a year ago, to Rambo, First Blood. I was only, how old do you think I was when he took me to that? Because I couldn't go. It was I was probably, I'm 47 years old.
You're 47, so you were 9 years old. He took you to that movie? Oh, your dad was a wild man. That was some serious violence, man.
That's probably what led to my professional wrestling career, minor leagues. Probably that.
Really? You did professional wrestling?
Yeah, I did the minor leagues. I'm a legitimate 6'10", and I did the minor leagues and made it to Germany. You know, I had a cup of coffee in certain minor leagues with some of the top stars of the, the Attitude Era. But yeah, he took me to First Blood, and also because I really wanted to see it. I'm an only child, so that's probably why. And then also the one with Schwarzenegger. First one, it was out just when First Blood was out.
Predator or Terminator, one of those Predator.
No, Cuban Commando, the Commando one,
Yeah,
where he had one of Schwarzenegger's.
I just want to talk about you. I don't want to talk about my career. I want to talk about your wrestling career.
Hey, that could be it for another time. I think you'll want to probably be on again. But no, let's talk about, when you talk about what was your role in First Blood.
So First Blood, who did I play in First Blood? Ward. When the sheriff arrests him and brings him to the jail, then I have to fingerprint him and wrestle with him. And then we get in this big fight and then we have to chase him through the woods. So that was my, and I was the deputy who wanted to really lock down on Rambo, and David Caruso was the deputy who didn't want to. And so we fought.
That's cool. I'm just, again, as a big fan of that. Say, name some other stuff you were in. I'm just interested because then I'll say, oh my gosh, I remember that. Now I could go back and
It's interesting that let me figure out what occurs to me, because I've done 101 movies. I did a mini series, a 3-part mini series for with Robert Duvall called Broken Trail about horse. Walter Hill directed it. I've done three movies. Walter Hill. I did Long Riders, 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy, and Long Riders. And Walter's a great guy. The rule in Hollywood is always do the Western. So I always do the Western, even though I played Frank Haig in Boardwalk Empire, so, which was a big deal. But also, Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks.
See, I never saw Captain Phillips.
You'd love that.
Yeah.
You're going to love that movie. It's fantastic.
And that was, would you say your biggest role was Captain Phillips? That's what it says in Wikipedia. What would you say?
My biggest role was a film that I wrote and starred in called Patty Rocks that won Sundance in 1988. And I wrote it with my late wife, Karen Landry Mulkey, and John Jenkins, and the director. And we won Sundance, and it played all over the world. We made it for like $400,000, and it made it. $20 million.
Oh wow! See, Wikipedia needs to update that stuff. If you say that's the one that you say the most, Wikipedia needs to fix some of the bio. Then
people, Neil used people when I was in New York. People would like when that movie was out. People used to quote my character. My character was really funny in the movie, and he'd go on these long diatribes about this and that. And so people would go, "Hey. Hey, Billy," that was my character's name. And then they would say these lines from the movie. They'd quote the movie to me. Bizarre.
That's crazy. All right. So let's all these interesting things. How do you prepare for these characters? You said a lot of dramatic characters. You seem like a comedy guy. You need to get some sort of comedy gig coming after the pandemic. But what makes you such a good drama guy?
Let me see. Growing up, I had a misguided childhood, and so in the street, you have to assert who you are.
Okay.
And so I was never afraid to. I always asserted who I was. If you get my meaning. So, and then I was a wrestler and a boxer, so it was I have my serious side because they call those things sports, but as you well know, they're not really sports. they're just combat, right?
Exactly.
So, but how do I prepare for it? I mean, I think about how the role refers to my life or people I've known. Invest in it and then bring it to the screen. One of the movies that I most recently did was On the Basis of Sex with Felicity Jones, and it was about the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Really? Oh wow.
And I played the plaintiff. I played the woman that Ruth Bader Ginsburg defended in order to get women's rights. It was the Equal Rights Act. And that's where all the equal rights for women came from Ruth Bader Ginsburg as an attorney.
Wow.
It's an amazing movie. But then it's interesting too. I'm a digress, but I've done three seminal movies that were women advocate movies. I had a very strong mother and wonderful sisters, and I was my late wife was a wonderful assertive woman. But I did Holly Hunter, and I did Roe versus Wade, which is about the abortion case.
Right.
And then I did the movie called North Country with Charlize Theron. She got an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress. Me and Jeremy Renner and Charlize Theron and Sissy Spacek. And that was about the sexual abuse in the mines in northern Minnesota. The third woman's movie I did was On the Basis of Sex.
Did you get called back to do any interviews when she passed away?
I did not. No. I mean, I
it was not like just a big thing for you to try to say, I'm going to do media unless I'm promoting something. Right, Chris? Or you're so busy doing other stuff.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's like, I don't want to jump on some train, you know.
You got to remember who the director could be. It could be anybody. It could be somebody that could be, as Michael Jordan always says, Republicans buy shoes as well. So why are you going to put yourself out there with your fans in this political climate that we're living in today, which I would never.
Yeah, it's like that. Oh, by the way, relative to your wrestling career, I wrote a movie for the Road Warriors.
Did you?
Hawk and Animal.
You're kidding me. Really?
I wrote a movie for him. And then what happened was Hawk passed away first.
Right.
We were just about ready to do the movie. And then Hawk had that heart attack and he passed away. Right. So young. Two great guys. Right. And so I still have the movie. It's called No Man's Land, starring the Road Warriors. It was great.
Were you playing it at all, or you just wrote it?
I was the writer. Yeah, I wrote it. And, you know, we tried to get it together, and our guys passed away, so.
Anyhow. You could try, maybe you should think about now, because they're both passed away, to have other people play it.
You're good. We're going to have to talk.
Oh, I already have a feeling we're going to be friends, as I got to see you before makeup, Chris. So when you jumped on my screen, I'm like, okay, this guy's going to be cool. Because I assumed that it cracks me up when people say, you know, Chris, you've been in so many different things, but because you're not known as an A-list in one thing, you're probably better off than a lot of people, but that kind of keeps you from having the stalkers, right? So in a lot of ways, you have all these great stories to tell, and you've been in so many great projects, but not reached that pinnacle. But you could still, right?
I don't really need to reach that pinnacle. I'm fine.
Really? You don't have any other goals in acting, like an Academy Award or a Emmy, if somebody decides to give you something, an opportunity in the show?
I've been in two movies that have won Academy Awards, and another two that got nominated for Academy Awards. So I don't know. It's okay. You can only eat like one salmon dinner at a time. So it's like, whatever, you know, it's like.
You could have one point in time, the opportunity could come in a show, as you see the way this business has changed.
Yeah, but it'd be great to do. I mean, I've done some movies that have really reached a ton of people, and it's great. I'm really fortunate for all this stuff.
I could interview just on your Wikipedia alone, but we're here to talk about The World Without You. So let's kind of talk about that. See, it's become a very interesting thing, Chris, in a way that this week has been theme-based in so many ways around the military. I had a film called Drowning. I was on the red carpet yesterday, the virtual red carpet. It wasn't in LA. Yeah. The Mia Sorvino was in and stuff, that's coming out as an independent film. And then I'm also going to be interviewing somebody for Recon, the Academy Award winner, this afternoon. So it's really become a Neil Haley show, military based, which I'm glad we're thinking about these things, especially with these stressful times coming to the election and such strife, that we could see what our military people have done to protect our country and keep us safe. So we have these freedoms going into a free election and a free society. So tell us about the film.
Well, you know, it's the story of a family that's celebrating the life of their son who has passed away. He was executed by the ISIS factions in Syria, and well, took place in Syria, but it's you know, and so it's a year since my son has died, and the whole family gets together to celebrate his passing. And it's the tension and the revelation about how we all regard each other and the sacrifice that my son made that really tells the story. And it's a beautifully crafted story. And I'm so happy that Suzanne Johnson decided to hire me to play the father. And I've had some loss in my family, and I had a ton of people in the military, and so it was particularly close to home. And so and we had a great cast, and it's just a beautiful film. It's a film that, I mean, your comment about these times, these are reflective times, and this film is perfect. It really fits the bill for these times, I think, you know, World Without You.
I agree. I completely do. And I just want us to think about when we vote, if we voted early or we vote on the day of the election, that if it wasn't for our military, we wouldn't have free elections.
If it wasn't for our military, we would not have free elections, and we may need them again. It's going to go well. It's the, you know, the fear monger is I've voted many times, and I've never seen a politician act this way and you know, question the veracity of our government. I mean, even in 1980, when the Supreme Court had to decide whether it was Bush or Gore, everything was, it went fine, but 92, there was no
92, not 80. I'm just to correct you.
Yeah. 92. Yeah, but there was no talk about,
no part of a revolution,
derision or
any of that stuff. Chaos.
It was the deal. So my feeling is now, I think, of course, I'm a total optimist, you know, but I think everything's going to be all right, which reminds me of a joke. The world champion optimist and the world champion pessimist met in Bucharest, Romania, for the world championship. And it was a dark, rainy night in February, and it was midnight, and they met in this bar in the basement underneath this hotel. And they both walked in, both smoking Gauloises. They put Schlibowitz down there. They sat down at the table. They stared at each other. The world champion pessimist looked at the optimist and said, "I don't think things could get much worse." And the optimist looked at him, took a sip, and said, "Don't be too sure." So things could get worse. We don't know.
Did you write this? Did you write that one?
No, that's an old Eastern European joke.
But you're a writer, so that's the thing. So what did you think about the cast and everything in the film? Tell us like some of your favorite, fondest memories.
I love the cast. We became a family instantly. I felt in working with Susan that she was the perfect grieving mother trying to hide her sorrow and her despair. And Annika Marx, who I know in, who's been a longtime friend of mine, just before we started to work on the film, I discovered that she was going to be my wife, my daughter in the film. And PJ Byrne, I loved him. And I mean, everybody was great. It was amazing. So, it was a very short, fast, intense shoot in Chicago. That's for sure. Baby. But low budget's like.
And now it's available on VOD and all that stuff, as I found out right now from the team, that now it's available. People can get the film now in different places. So that's good. And that's great. And I think it's perfect timing coming up to Veterans Day. We're leading, let's not focus on the election. Let's focus on Veterans Day, November 10th. And really people need to go out and purchase the film and watch a bunch Amen. Of movies that are involving the military and honoring our country and not this strife that we're dealing with. And hopefully by November 10th, everything will be okay.
And it'll be okay. I'll be in Cape Town, South Africa. I'm on the 5th, November 5th, I'm going to Cape Town, South Africa to start a TV series. But we'll know then, it'll be, or maybe not, but it'll be fine. By Veterans Day, yeah, for sure. It's going to be, you know.
So you're going to Cape Town, South Africa. You're bringing up all these other countries. Do people love you all over the world, Chris? That's what it sounds like.
It's amazing how people know, like a lot of people in Belgrade, Serbia, would come up to me and, I know you, you're Hank Jennings from Twin Peaks. I love your work. This is a very scary guy. You know, how do they, I mean, I don't look like that guy. You know, I'm like, I'm an older guy now.
Yeah, I've never watched Twin Peaks. That shows my age, right? I got to catch up on that one too. And I lived through the Boardwalk Empire. Anytime I binge a show, they become a family to me. And when it ends, it's like over. And when I saw your picture, I'm like, I want him on my show. I'm going to interview him.
Oh.
Because I knew that.
So, Neil, So, Neil, you need to watch on USA Network, there's a series called Briar Patch with Rosario Dawson and myself. And, you know, it's a really great, great show. Watch that. Briar Patch.
Oh, is it still really on? Good. Is it? Are you still? Can you have another season?
Yeah, it came out. It's been on. You can get it on demand on USA Net. Now it's been out for about since May. Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. So you don't know about another season because of the pandemic, then?
Yeah, the pandemic. Our town is shut down. I think I'm one of the only actors that's working. August, I was the only actor.
Yeah. There's only a few people shooting in different places. And I guess, is that fearful? Do you scare? Are you, speaking of COVID-19, are you fearful when you travel?
No, I had COVID in March.
Oh my gosh.
I have a band and we played at this place called the Bourbon Room in Hollywood and Vine, great club. And in the back, they were doing the School of Rock, and Nick Cordova, who starred in School of Rock, met with me and my daughter, and because we were going to do her cabaret there as in that theater as well. And he was sweating and he had a cold and he didn't feel well. And, you know, we heard rumors, because I had just come back from London. So I heard rumors about it. And 2 days later, my daughter was sick. And then 2 days after that, I was sick, as well as her two kids, her mother-in-law and her husband and my girlfriend. And we were all like, we're out for 10 days and we got tested.
What were your symptoms?
It was so odd. I was sitting in my backyard and I was playing guitar. And all of a sudden it was a sunny day, just like today. And all of a sudden I felt terrible. It was like somebody flipped a switch and I'm a healthy guy, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, boom. I went, what the heck? And I went in and I kind of laid down on the couch and I went to sleep. And when I woke up, I felt so tired and I had a start of a cough and kind of a stuffy nose. And then that night I got a fever of about 100 for about 3 hours. And that whole thing lasted for about a week. But I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't read the paper. I couldn't play guitar. I couldn't listen to music. All I wanted was quiet, and I just wanted to lay down, and that was it. And then after about 10 days, I was back up. But I went and got tested. But I was so lethargic. I mean, if I could have worn the same clothes for 10 days, which I didn't, but I would have.
Isn't it crazy how certain people get certain symptoms and other people don't? That's what we have to figure out. Like, for example, even somebody – that I might be younger and I might have had the sniffles and cough, but not the fever. And I could have been carrying the virus the whole time.
Yeah, you could have. And Nick went into the hospital for 70 days and died June 12th.
Oh yeah. See, I
45
forgot
years old.
Nick. Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. I see you got to remind me of name dropping. I knew it was saying, okay, now you're bringing up. So you were with him when he got, oh my gosh. Was that hard on you too? That's got to be hard.
It's crazy. Yeah, and it said, you know, he's a married guy, 45 years old, yeah. He had this beautiful wife and kid. It's like, you know, they had blood clots, went, you know, he had blood clots, it went into his leg, they had to amputate a leg.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and he went the hard way.
Didn't happen.
Very great guy.
And I think that the film will also resonate with you as well, Chris. The film, when it comes to COVID-19 times, right? What we're struggling through and understand about sacrifice with COVID-19.
Well, yeah, you know, people, the World Without You is such a great film on so many levels because it's about family members trying to accommodate each other and over accommodate each other and sort of that shaky ground that we're all on. It's such an intriguing multi-layered film. It's so amazing. In a way I'm glad for the lockdown so that people can see this film on demand and they can bring it into their homes and kind of watch it in their homes because it's such an intimate story. If I look on the bright side of things, that would be the case. Yeah, for sure.
All right. You know, you're the optimist, right, Chris? So we are going to call you optimist, right? So you get off.
I am the optimist. Okay. I am the optimist.
Okay. So let's kind of finish off.
I am the
optimist. Where people again can find The World Without You is basically it's available now, but also is there a website to find The World Without You? That people can find information. Are you familiar or not on that?
Yeah, if you Google it, it'll just come up. World Without You will Google it. I'm not the greatest internet guy, but I can find it. So if you can't find, I mean, you everybody will find it. The World Without You, and it just pops right up. Pops right up on YouTube. The trailer's right there. It's one anecdote of the thing. We were at the graveyard putting stones on the. On my son's grave, which was an intense scene. And we were walking out of the graveyard and Annika Marx is there. And I looked and I said, Annika, I wasn't going to mention this, but you know, your family's from Chicago. She said, yes. I said, you know, this it's a Jewish family. So I played the father and this is a Jewish graveyard. And I said, there's a marked tombstone right there from your, and I'm wondering if it's your family. She looked over and there's a big tombstone and said marks on it. And so we took pictures of it. And then we go, because her great aunt was from Chicago. And so it turned out that was her great aunt's grave. It was such a odd coincidence and lovely too. It was amazing.
All right. You're going to play us a song to leave. So go ahead and sing us a song to say goodbye. Here we go. Well,
yeah. Oh! O'Neill was a host of a wonderful show. We had a good conversation, but Neil, I gotta go. I'm going to the beach with my grandkids, you see. Jump into the ocean. Hey, come with me, Neil Haley.
Oh,
Neil Haley, thanks for having me on. Thank you, Neil.
You're welcome, Chris, and you got to think about this. I have the resources. Let's go find the financing to finance your film about Hawk and Animal. I think it's perfect timing. So we'll talk about it.
You're on. You're on.
All right. I have
nice
your
to meet you, brother.
All right. See you, Chris. All right. All right, guys. That was the Neil Haley Show, guys. Take care.